Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. I can't imagine what you're all talking about. Like, what? Okay. Good morning. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here today. We're going to be hearing about the Northside Urban Partnership. As you know, I wanted to give you a heads up about the next couple of weeks. We have 5 weeks left to the TMR season, so you're going to want to make sure and join us for as many of those weeks as you can. Next week, we'll be talking with Ryan McMahon, the new chair of the Onondaga County Legislature, about their agenda and his vision for the ledge. The first week in April, we'll be talking with Dr. John McCabe at Upstate about the Upstate Community General merger. And you know what's happened since that went on, and some other issues. So you'll want to bone up on any questions about that. Then we will be talking to Mayor Miner. We'll be speaking with Marianne Carey Schmidt from Say Yes, and then we'll be finishing up with our own Peter Dunn of the Central New York Community Foundation. So that's the lineup for the next 5 weeks. All right, but this, one reminder that by this time next week, if you have a nomination for a TMR Community Service Award recipient, please, again, next week, this time is the deadline for those nominations. So it is my pleasure to welcome TMR member Sarah McElvain to introduce today's speaker. Thank you, Sarah.
Not to worry. For the person who specializes in one-liners, this is very difficult. And particularly if I'm sitting down and you're standing up. Dominic Robinson is going to be speaking to us today, and he has a family background which, like for so many of us, made him the man he is. He has a very competitive father, and Dominic is very competitive about certain things. And to balance that, he has a very compassionate mother. I'm not sure what St. Lucie's is doing about getting its dishes washed and refrigerator cleaned out after big events at the church, because that was the type of thing she did so well. She would do the quiet, little, useful things. So those two combinations in a very bright person makes an interesting set of skills. So Dominic has the ability to build a team, and he has the ability to pick talent. But he was very, very young when I first met him. And the way I met him is I was at a Northside meeting, and a couple of the old-timers told me there was somebody who got lots of money on the Northside, was spending it on children, wasn't sharing any of the money, and what was it all about? I said, whereabouts on the north side is kind of big. So they told me Assumption Church, and so I started doing my usual looking around and found this young man. Well, not only was he, did he get a very nice grant and was spending on children and doing some very creative things that no other agency was doing in this town, he was also the person organizing under 40. And if you have two things you're passionate about, and you don't have a mother watching over you, you don't have a father guiding you, and you don't have a serious girlfriend at that time, you get a little sloppy around the edges. You always get where you need to get to, but sometimes your shirt isn't tucked in. Well, he was doing this, he was creative, he was bright, and two women entered his life. One was Kathy Rizzito, who was now the executive vice president at St. Joe's Hospital. And she realized that St. Joe's medically was very good, but had an image problem in this community. I was one of the many people who called it the hospital that ate the north side. They were so busy saving lives that they could not possibly see what was going outside their front door. The other woman was Janelle Allen, who was a very bright person who soon became the community geographer. Well, Kathy gave Dominic a job, and Janelle married Dominic, And we now have a very professional community organizer who has a project called North Side Up. Dominic.
By far the best introduction I've ever gotten. And I will say that for those of you who know Sarah, you know that she can be a very challenging person in the very literal sense of the word. She likes to challenge just about everything. And I can be proud to say that I had been challenged by Sarah many times in my career, especially early on. And for her to be introducing me so generously today really means a lot. It also means a lot that she would take the time to acknowledge my family, and that means a lot too. So I want to start by just giving a blanket caveat that I have a federal grant due today, so I've been up all night with that and a daughter under 2 years old and a son who's a month old. So I might be a little off my game, but hopefully I'll still be somewhat entertaining. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about our work on the north side of Syracuse and its implications for that part of this community, but maybe the broader community as well. I want to start by asking you to imagine what a community looks like when there is a lot of investment in the physical infrastructure, there's a lot of money being poured into it, but there's not necessarily jobs for community residents. In that kind of community, there might be a veneer of vitality, of revitalization, but if the people who live there are poor and don't have access to opportunity, then there's a fundamental problem in that community that is not going to go away until people suddenly are empowered or gradually empowered and given opportunities to participate in that economy. Similarly, a community that has businesses and economic opportunity for people who are local, strong local business community, but maybe has some severely blighted conditions and doesn't necessarily have a quality of place. In that community, as people access those economic opportunities, become stable, move their way up in the world, they're not likely to always want to stay in a place that looks like that. It's based upon that principle that I would like to kind of propose the work we do at North Side Up. It's really combining the premises of economic and community development. And the idea here is to create economic opportunity that empowers neighborhood residents to become active participants in an economy while building a quality of place that not only keeps them there but attracts new people into the community. So that's really kind of what we're trying to do. And I think that if you were to think about the North Side, the beautiful historic North Side, and what it once was, I talk to hundreds of people on a fairly regular basis who like to remind me about what the North Side used to be. The North Side used to be a place that was bustling with life and activity, where children and parents would walk to work and school respectively every day, where networks of parents would you know, kind of take care of each other's kids as they played in the street, where you could do a day's worth of errands on foot and know all the business owners that you met. That is the North Side that used to exist when it was the original home to the immigrant Italian and German communities. We all know that story has changed now, you know, with deindustrialization, the loss of jobs, white flight, suburbanization, all the things that have contributed to the decline of not only the North Side or inner city Syracuse, but similar communities all across the country. Those things have all happened. And in a way, that has really robbed the North Side of a lot of its quality of life. You can walk around this community and see all kinds of vitality, people who are good people doing their very best to make a living, doing their very best to provide for their families, doing their very best to live peacefully. But the conditions are different. There's challenges there in terms of crime, in terms of lack of economic opportunity, in terms of blight and disinvestment that weren't there 50 years ago. And so Our interest is, to some approximation, you know, knowing that things will never be the same as they once were, but to restore that quality of life. And quality of life can be defined by a lot of things, but we see it as being this beautiful urban fabric that is the North Side, that provides a safe and prosperous environment for people to live in, where they can make a living, they can walk, and live in a way that is comfortable and environmentally sustainable, and enjoy their lives. And so that's really the mission of what we're trying to do in a nutshell. And I think that it's safe to say that the core elements of that quality of life are still very much present in the North Side. And that's what gives us a lot of hope. Our ultimate goal is to radically improve the quality of life in this community. That's what we were kind of commissioned to do. My work first began, as Sarah mentioned, at Assumption Church. A Franciscan friar named Kenise Connors, who kind of randomly became a mentor to me, invited me to come and kind of build off the social services that were being delivered out of Assumption Church, where they have a food pantry, a sandwich program, affordable housing, health clinic for the poor and underserved. All those things were doing great things, but doing nothing necessarily to change the dynamic of poverty, to challenge the status quo. And his invitation to me was to come in and try to radically improve the quality of life by building a series of partnerships that will allow us to do that, knowing we can't do it by ourselves. But let's convene people and institutions and organizations that share our interests and have a like-minded approach and want to go forth together. And so that's really what this whole thing was predicated on from the beginning, and it still is. We first started out as something called the Northside Collaboratory. I actually last presented here, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago, during the very early years of the Northside Collaboratory. And at the time, it was a relatively modest operation. We did get a nice grant to do some youth programming, and through that youth programming, we were also able to engage parents in the community and to do some organizing around what they are interested in seeing in the community. We learned that people were interested in seeing multicultural events that represented the full ethnicity of the North Side and not just those original populations. So we were able to put on some festivals. We started looking at other little programs, but as we got into it more and more, we realized that if we weren't going to change the economic and physical conditions of the community, it was more or less rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic, to put it bluntly. I mean, we really were doing nice things, and I think we were giving people a sense of empowerment, but what were we really doing to change the dynamic? Well, I think for us, the dynamic changed when St. Joseph's and Kathy Ricito looked to us in partnership with the then MDA, now Center State CEO, to move the neighborhood forward in a way that was maybe a little less than traditional or more than traditional, I don't know, but in a way that wasn't necessarily one that had been tried a lot of times. So today, that has led us to become the Northside Urban Partnership, and we are no longer just a small community organizing function based out of the Franciscan Church of the Assumption. We are there, as my communications director Stasia likes to put it, we're the slightly offbeat, highly motivated offspring of St. Joseph's, Center State CEO, Catholic Charities, Assumption Church, and the Greater North Salina Business Association. We're a bunch of young staff working with established players, trying to achieve a vision of quality of life, which has components that are discreetly interesting to each one of those organizations. And that's what's really exciting about this. I would guess 10 years ago, you wouldn't see these logos on a slide together in any context. But the reality is that there's a vision of quality of life where each one of these players has a specific interest. The overall safety and well-being of the neighborhood in the case of St. Joe's, the vibrancy and prosperity of the business community in the case of Center State, the church and Catholic Charities similarly having an interest in, you know, the well-being of the people, especially the marginalized people who live in our community, and the business association, similarly to Center State CEO, wanting to see a healthy business climate. All those things are components of a much larger vision of prosperity and health, and yet, and they're interdependent. And so for these organizations to come together and collaboratively sponsor an organization is exciting, and frankly, it makes sense. Logistically, it can be very challenging, but that's maybe for the Q&A section. The premise of our entire operation is really about partnerships. When we started out at the collaboratory, we said, well, you know, at the time, I had a Franciscan friar that was a quasi-mentor to me and provided some assistance, but it was really myself and my my good buddy, partner in crime, Martin Jacobs, who's now over the Near West Side Initiative, the two of us kind of were sitting in an office together with no budget, no clue, you know, both in our mid-20s. And we realized that if we were going to achieve anything, we really needed to go out and organize people and organizations and institutions around some goals. And so we came up with a model of organizing that was really about investment. And we asked people to invest in tangible projects and to invest in a way that was proportional to their size and relevant to their assets. So St. Joseph's Hospital, we had no problem asking them for money. But, you know, the woman down the street who's on Medicaid, would you help flyer some houses for an event? Both of those things in our eyes were significant investments based upon where those two, you know, entities were at. And it was that premise that's kind of allowed us to move forward. So today our sponsoring partners were those logos that you saw up on the slide. And those are people trying to achieve that common goal. We also have a lot of program partners. Every program we run is really an aggregation of several other organizations trying to achieve a common goal. And we leverage the individual assets of organizations for something bigger. And we'll talk about that as we talk about the work that we do. It's really important to talk about building on our assets. I said the core tenets of quality of life on the north side are still present. We deeply believe that. And I think that it's most obvious in two areas: our community, the people who live in it. I don't know of many places in the United States where you can find the diversity that you see on the north side. We have literally almost every habitable continent represented in our community. We have over 30 languages spoken. We have African Americans. We have, you know, the old school kind of European immigrant population, the refugees. We have immigrants. It's incredible. At the same time, it's really majestic building stock, from sturdy, really nice working class housing to beautiful mixed-use buildings. We really think that that's an asset that we want to build on and preserve. And so there's other assets too, but I think that those really typify what we're working with. And while there's many challenges both in the population itself and the poverties they face and the crime that some of them partake in or whatever, and there's certainly challenges with the buildings that we're working with, you know, contamination and blight, they also represent opportunities, and we really try to focus it on that way. Our work kind of has, as Sarah also could have attested, I suffer from kind of both grandiose visions and an overactive imagination, and so I think in our early years we were all over the map in what we were trying to do, and you could still accuse us of that, but we have tried to organize ourselves a little bit more fundamentally in the last several years, and we do so by kind of organizing our work between people, place, and business. We see this as the fundamental pillars of a healthy community. Talking a little bit more, actually, quickly, I just want to mention that, you know, a lot of people ask, where do we focus our energies and our attentions? It's actually a tricky thing to answer, because when it comes to people, we frankly, if we can help someone improve their lot in life, if we can help someone create, you know, an economic opportunity for themselves or an opportunity for civic engagement, we're not really going to turn them away if they live outside of a boundary line. That said, when we focus our resources in terms of a physical location, you know, whether we're doing building revitalization or anything else, we're looking at what's that kind of sloppy triangle right there that basically consists of, and that's not marked very well, but for those of you with a keen eye for Syracuse, starting from the bottom left or your bottom right going all the way up, it's Holly Green, crossing James to Prospect Hill, and then up through the North Salina Street corridor, the northeastern boundary there being Lodi Street, the southwestern boundary being 81. And we kind of focus our attentions up to about Kirkpatrick Street. I have to emphasize, and I can't emphasize enough, that revitalization in a community, it might not start with an anchor institution, but an anchor institution is incredibly important. And the revitalization that we're seeing in St. Joe, in the north side today, I think is, and there really has been a tremendous uptick on a lot of fronts over the last decade, and I think 99% of that could be traced back to what Sarah mentioned in terms of Kathy Rosito, the now president of St. Joe's, who really has embraced the hospital's role in the community in a way that the hospital hadn't embraced that role in decades. And Kathy, really through her leadership, has rallied the larger hospital community around the cause of the North Side. And I really, truly believe that that, if not alone, has certainly played a huge role in the changes that we're now seeing today. And so it's important that we're building on that asset. It's important we talk about our assets. What greater asset to have than an institution that's sinking $220 million into its campus currently that employs 3,500 people? It's very, you know, there's got to be opportunity there. With a challenged community around it, there's ways to build that bridge. The first way we tried to build that bridge was through a program we started called Green Train. And Green Train really has kind of become a flagship program for us. It's a intensive 12-week construction and weatherization training class for neighborhood residents, and it's done with all the partners that you're seeing up on that screen there, from BOCES, who provides our curriculum, as well as EFF to some degree, Cooperative Federal, who provides financial literacy, CNY Works, who provides some services and funding, and the Syracuse City School District, who provides ESL. We bring all those program partners together to make a class that, on the one hand, is training people for real jobs that employers want, you know, employers want to have filled, and we're listening to employers constantly to ask how we can refine that program. And on the other hand, we're tailoring the program in a way that's accessible to the people who live in the neighborhood. To date, we, as of March 30th, we'll have graduated 130 students. We have about a 90% graduation rate and an 85% job placement rate. Those are numbers that we're very proud of, competitive with any program like ours across the country. Well, thanks. And what's even more important about this is that, going back to that original kind of premise around the combination of economic and community development, the investments that we've seen both in terms of the hospital's campus and their expansion, as well as some of the housing projects that the hospital has invested in and brought in other partners and we've helped facilitate, we've seen our graduates literally graduate and go to work on those projects. So inner city advocates across the country have scenarios where investment comes into a community and the constant cry is, where are the jobs for our people? Well, the reality is that sometimes you have to build a mechanism that brings them to that jobs to begin with. And so that's what we've tried to do and have been able to do successfully. We're not tipping any needles yet, let's be honest. I mean, we haven't changed the poverty rate in the north side of Syracuse, but we think that there's an answer there that we just have to build on. Something that we've kind of been working on for quite some time, but it's relatively new in name, is the Northside Business Partnership. The Northside has had a very solid but modest business association for several decades, and as that association has aged and not necessarily maintained cultural relevance to the emerging business population, we were asked to come in and provide staff to that business association. And since that time, we've been able to kind of combine the services of various partners, most notably Center State CEO and their small business chamber services, as well as some other organizations, to essentially provide a handful of services to member businesses. We provide advocacy, so we will, you know, try to find solutions to everything from parking problems to zoning and code issues. We create visibility. We do marketing and promotion for businesses, both through our own website, but we also do activities that try to create visibility and access for those businesses inside St. Joe's. And we also engage them in revitalization. The other thing is, we say, you know, this is your neighborhood. We're doing good work. Why don't you help invest in us and be a part of the solution too? And we're creating a network of concerned business owners that somehow can, you know, just by their sheer togetherness, can make a difference. And we think that's very important too. We also have helped develop some small businesses. Now, this is painstaking work that takes a long time. We've talked to probably hundreds of would-be business owners, and I think we can comfortably claim 3 to 4 business starts that we've very much been actively, you know, more than a part of, like, I think, responsible for. Two most notable and also emblematic of the work we do, Craft Chemistry, which you see on the left, is a handcrafted arts and crafts consignment shop, very much targeted at a contemporary art crowd, very much driven by people in my age demographic. And it's very much in our mission to try to attract people who, you know, are in my demographic to the North Side. We think that there's plenty of room, literally, for them, and we think that their presence only strengthens the economic and cultural diversity of the neighborhood. So trying to bring people like Brianna, who you see in the picture there, to the neighborhood to create a sense of vitality that wasn't there is very important. And yet on the right, you see what is a Somali market started by a relatively recent Somali refugee who wanted to create a hub for Somali community, offering kind of goods and products that wouldn't necessarily be easy to find in Syracuse, but that would be tailored to his ethnic population. Both were really challenging processes, as have the other businesses that we've helped, but we believe that they're very significant in terms of what they represent, but also the impact they have, both in terms of populating vacant storefronts, in terms of becoming a gathering place for community, and obviously in terms of the sheer economic impact. We really focus on our corridor revitalization, and that really stretches from the Prospect Hill footprint around St. Joe's, and we're looking at the environment there and asking how we can rebuild that. But we're also looking at the North Salina Street corridor in Holly Green. One of the great, you know, easy wins we've had in that, I say easy relatively, I see my program manager Jonathan smiling right there, there's nothing easy about this, but the New York State Main Street program, we were able to get a nice size Main Street allocation a couple years back, and we've been able to do renovations like the one you see here. That was the African Caribbean Market on the 700 block of North Salina Street. On the left-hand side is what it was, on the right-hand side is what it is now, and we've done a few of those through that. We've also done some other similar projects through different means, and we've been helpful with St. Joe's and some of their efforts around property development as well. But looking at the mixed-use corridors in our community is essential to creating a sense of vibrancy and quality of life, and obviously very much dovetails with any smart growth agenda or economic development urban core agenda that some of the larger entities that we partner with have. Something that in the business that we're in is called placemaking. It's a term I actually really, really like, and it's something we really take seriously. There are little things in a community that convey a sense of progress that maybe are easier wins than, you know, revitalizing a 10,000-foot vacant building, 10,000-square-foot vacant building. You know, in this case, we're talking about public art. We're talking about green space. We're talking about community gardens. But, you know, steadily over the last 5 years, we've had a lot of relatively little wins, still a lot of work, but things that produce tangible signs of progress that allow you to easily engage community members and actually making them happen. You know, we've gotten neighborhood residents to start community gardens and help design and build them. We've gotten neighborhood residents to sit on planning committees around green space and public space designs, and now they're free to use them, as well as public art. And so, you know, I think it's a really cool, and we're really insistent on using the model where we're both making something beautiful, getting community residents to say what that should be, but then also getting them one way or another to actually help create it, volunteer, build. You know, sometimes we've employed youth to help install some of these things. We have the great fortune of working with two exceptional agencies when it comes to housing, both Home Headquarters and Housing Visions. And what's important about housing for us is that we have executed it in a way that really marries kind of two what might seem on the surface to be polar opposite intentions. On the one hand, we feel very strongly about the need for and the importance of affordable housing in our community, though we think it needs to be done better than affordable housing has been done historically in the United States. And it so happens that Housing Visions does a great job of that. They produce clean, well-constructed, safe, well-managed, affordable housing that is offering, you know, residents to all kinds of different people, people with disabilities, people who are aging. But at the end of the day, it's the people who need affordable housing aren't going away. So we need to make sure it's good, and we need to make sure that it's well run. And so on the one hand, we've done a great job, and really Housing Visions has done a great job of bringing some high quality affordable housing to our community. And yet, just in some cases, three parcels away and never more than a couple blocks away, we're also working with Home Headquarters and private developers to create market rate housing, both in terms of home ownership, owner-occupied housing, as well as market rate rentals and things like that. What's really exciting is that every home that Home Headquarters is renovated and sold on the market to a middle-class tenant has sold almost immediately to people who you might not expect coming back to live in the North Side, but have chosen to do so, sometimes people with families. We have a house that Home Headquarters did last year that sits on the corner of McBride and Laurel Street. This is a place where, across the street where Nick Pirro lives a few years ago, he didn't think he could sell his house for $60,000. Last year, that home on McBride and Laurel sold for $109,000. That is literally half a block away from the Prospect Hill homes that Housing Visions have done. What we're doing with our housing strategy, we're not trying to do anything ourselves as far as the implementation. We have partners that are better at that than we would ever be, so we're employing them, but we're trying to craft an approach that really reintegrates the neighborhood economically, that creates the urban community of old, where you have rich and poor living side by side without really even knowing the difference on the surface. We also like to create what we call happenings. Us young, cool kids. we run a variety of programs that essentially try to engage neighborhood residents on the one hand to be a part of something that's exciting and fun, but on the other hand, and I would say this probably is more often the case than not, attracts people who don't live in our community to the neighborhood to have a really great experience and maybe see the community in a different way. Our what's become kind of a flagship to this is called the Salt City Dishes. Dishes stands for Dine-In, Support Happenings, and Live in Syracuse. It is partially the brainchild of my colleague over there, Stasia Erickson, who's being talked to by Sarah. But she's good, I promise. It's done in collaboration with Craft Chemistry, the business we talked about, as well as 40 Below. It's a program that essentially invites people to come in, share a home-cooked, locally sourced meal, enjoy music, enjoy a lot of frivolity, but then the program itself is on that stage, which is in the St. Clair Theater on the Assumption Church campus. Presenters get to pitch ideas for enlivening Syracuse, doing some sort of project that might make the community better, and they have a strict kind of schedule they follow, and they only have so many minutes. But at the end of the event, the entire crowd gets a ballot and they vote for the idea they like best. And the winner of that vote gets all of the money that was collected at the door for entry. And so then that money goes to actually seeding the project. And so, we've actually been able to kind of kick off some nice little projects in the last few years, but more so with building community of like-minded people and doing it on the North Side and getting people to see what's possible. And what's really cool is that we've had a group of young artists and architects come to us about wanting to rehab a building on North Salina Street after that event. Once they saw the space, once they kind of engaged in the atmosphere, we also had someone come to us who we're working with possibly to help start a bakery in the community because of what they saw there. So it's certainly creating an imagination in people about the North Side that they did not have before. So as we look forward, that's kind of I will say, that's a lot of stuff we're doing, and the only reason we're able to do all that stuff is because of all the partnerships we have. And it's really, a testament to the fact that people are willing to do something that's not just theirs. We're really aggregating all these great people to work together. And so I can tell you that we're doing more than you just saw, even. But that's at least a good glimpse into the kind of work we do. As we look ahead, we're trying to do the same kind of work. And I just want to touch on, as I close, a couple last things about where we're headed. First of all, this spring, ideally next month, we'll be launching a program that has been modeled after our Green Train program in construction in healthcare. We've been working very, very closely with the organizations you're seeing there, but probably most notably St. Joseph's and their HR department and the hiring managers, to create a career pathway for neighborhood residents for jobs into the healthcare system at St. Joe's. The idea is get them into entry-level jobs, but then where this program will really have a unique flavor is we're going to provide intensive ongoing support that will allow people to kind of ascend career ladders once they're inside St. Joe's. It's one of the last bastions of middle-class work, at least in this community. And so for us to empower people to kind of work their way into that is really important, we think really a stabilizing factor. And it's a nice symbiotic relationship between Anchor Institution and community residents. We're kicking it off this spring. We'll see how it goes, but we feel excited. Prospect Park, that is a rendering that essentially shows you Prospect Avenue coming from the new expansion of St. Joe's down Prospect into North Salina Street. We're basically trying to leverage the new investments made in St. Joe's campus to encourage pedestrian activity out of the hospital onto the North Salina Street business corridor. Clearly, you know, previous iterations of the hospital construction weren't necessarily designed to connect the hospital to the community. Kind of for all the reasons we've talked about now, that's very much changing. The construction itself is really designed to step down to the neighborhood, but the connectivity also has to be enhanced by some sort of enhanced pedestrian thoroughfare, a mini connective corridor, if you will, a pedestrian connective corridor, and that's what we're working on right now. Matt Marco here from CH2M Hill, representing the county, obviously is I would be remiss if I didn't mention him. He's putting a ton of time and energy, not just in saying that this qualifies for the Save the Rain program, but also he sees it as a really good idea for developing our community, and we're working really well with him, the city of Syracuse, as well as several others to make that a reality by 2013. We're also taking what some of you might remember as the old Donzie's Sausage Shop, kind of a north side landmark for many years, and we actually got St. Joe, our home headquarters, to acquire that building, and we're working with them and some developers to revitalize it into some sort of mixed-use space where we're looking at food service, most likely downstairs, and ideally residential living upstairs. We're working through project plans and budgets and programming needs and all that right now. So hopefully, again, by 2013, we'll see something physically happening there. I also would be remiss if I didn't say we're also working with home headquarters and obviously St. Joe's on revitalizing the Otisca building, which unfortunately revitalizing might mean demolishing. but we are working to create something very good in its place if we do have to demolish it, which is most likely going to be the case, unfortunately, after 30 years of disinvestment. So we are working hard with them to make something positive happen there, and you'll be hearing more about that most likely in the papers in the coming months. And finally, something that we're working to kick off this year, a refugee business program, Hope Print, which is a new, really great organization serving refugees on the north side, as well as the existing refugee resettlement and assistance programs, Cooperative Federal, our community development credit union and micro lender of choice, and the SBDC and Center State CEO. We're all coming together to create a kind of collaborative incubation process for refugee business owners. Clearly, it's something we've already done with these same partners already. We're trying to formalize it, make it robust, and make it something that really can kind of stand on its own and do a lot more than it has to date. So I would encourage you guys to keep up with us. We have a new website, northsideup.org, which we're actually really proud of. It's taken about a year to build, but we think it's nicely laid out and got a lot of good information. And Stassi maintains a really great blog on there every day with all kinds of fun and interesting tidbits. So feel free to check out the website. And with that, I will say thank you. I do have one caveat, too. Stassi, I believe, is going to pull up a slide with our contact information. I was a very bad networker this morning and forgot to replenish my business cards. So if you need to get a hold of us, you can either take one of their business cards or just write down the information that you'll see up on the screen. Thanks. Yes. Yeah, it'd be radical. I mean, literally, you know, it would. One of the really strange realities that we face on the north side is that from a pedestrian standpoint, we are literally disconnected from downtown and Franklin Square, two places of huge growth. We're seeing similar growth in certain pockets of the north side, but you take your life into your hands when you try to cross the Butternut Street Bridge, the Catawba Street Bridge, and so, you know, where we should be able to let our community residents easily access the Inner Harbor or go to Franklin Square for whatever, or go downtown, it's really not that easy. And so So yeah, I mean, I think it would dramatically not only improve that aspect, but it would also create clearly development opportunities that would connect those areas from a development standpoint better.
Habitat for Humanity is also building houses. Are you in connection with that?
You actually saved me because I missed something in my notes today, and so you're allowing me to mention something that I forgot in my talk. Yes, the answer is absolutely. We're collaborating with both. First of all, as far as the Near West Side Initiative with Syracuse University is concerned, the easy connection is that my former assistant director is now the director of that program with Marilyn Higgins. So, I mean, he was a groomsman at my wedding. We're really close, and so we couldn't not talk if we wanted to. And so we're always trying to figure out ways to work together. But concretely, what that means thus far is that we've actually been able to take our Green Shame job training program and replicate it on the Near West Side over the past year. We're about to finish our third program over there with Near West Side residents. I think that our two initiatives are actually somewhat compatible in the sense that they've done a much better job of driving the real estate market so far. I mean, they've acquired a ton of money to do some pretty serious real estate projects. We kind of got started a little bit, you know, my first year officially in the role with the hospital was 2008, and since that year, money's been a little harder to come by. But they've been able to take a lot of that early investment they got and do a lot of great physical things, but they didn't necessarily have the same infrastructure around community programming, job training, and some of the other stuff that we've done. And so we've been able to kind of supplement their investment in the community from an infrastructure standpoint with the job training and other stuff that we're kind of working on now. So yes, that's going well, and we see a lot of room for growth with a partnership with them. As far as Habitat is concerned, we've kind of suggested where there might be opportunities to do north side housing. That hasn't really taken off yet, but what we are doing is our Green Train class on the Near West Side is currently building the storage sheds that go with the Habitat houses for the houses. So they're through their hands-on learning, they're actually contributing to the Habitat projects. So that's kind of where it stands to date.
Good morning, Dominic. Congratulations on your nice little family, your son, and your work. My question is, excuse me, I'm so impressed with all the partners that you have and the work you're doing. I wonder if you could comment on the role of literacy and language in all the work that you're doing.
Literacy and language clearly are essential in a lot of ways, both with our refugee and immigrant population, but with also populations of adults and children living in generational poverty. We're really kind of doing two things ourselves in literacy, although there's plenty of other great things happening on the north side. One, we are facilitating ESL that is somewhat targeted ESL around community projects. For example, we did a project with the Congolese community last year where they were clamoring for a garden. A lot of them had agricultural backgrounds, and so we helped them build a community garden just up the block from our offices. But a lot of them also still had a lot of work left around their English skills. And so we actually partnered up with the school district and the Refugee Assistance Program and got an English, an ESL teacher to literally kind of integrate into the garden planning and implementation process and did ESL through that. And so and saw great gains through it. So very kind of targeted, purposeful ESL is kind of the thing that we're excited about, providing an added value beyond just the normal literacy and language programs that are out there. And then additionally, we integrate ESL into all of our job training classes. The last thing we do is we help facilitate program for general ESL classes in the space at Assumption. We provide a little money to help the Refugee Assistance Program and others run classes that they run out of space for in their buildings. So we see it as important, and we're certainly, we'd love to keep doing more.
On the same side of the street that Donzie's is, a bunch of new multiple dwelling houses has been built. How are they going? Who owns them? And are you going to do it in more places?
The properties that you're seeing there are owned by Housing Visions Unlimited, which is the nonprofit housing partner we talked about. Those are called Prospect Hill Homes. There's about 50 units, and that is low to moderate income housing. There's units in that housing actually reserved for Arise tenants, and it's going great. It's 100% occupied. We have people who are working in the hospital, kind of on the lower pay scales, living in the houses, walking across the street to work. And like most of Housing Vision's projects, it's going really well. And the answer is, as far as doing more is concerned, yes, we're very interested in doing more. We're currently courting Housing Vision's to do another project on the north side to kind of get an application for funding in this year.
We have another question over here, and then I'll get back there with the microphone later.
Dominic, a comment and a question. I can't wait to have you come back over the next 5 or 10 years. That's the comment. Because, of course, you know, right, that people are talking about you as mayor.
Ha! They can keep talking. Is that a question, too? Oh, that's a long, that's I don't know. I have not thought about politics seriously yet.
Well, I'll make a comment. We've talked a lot about the role of St. Joe's, and for those of you who want to hear more, Kathy Rosito will be speaking at the Institute for Retired People on May 3rd, and I'll remind you all as that gets closer, but you could hear Kathy on May 3rd. Frank, you had another question.
Oh, I just was wondering about the financial setup. Who explain how they own this and all this?
Housing Vision's in a nutshell.
Is a nonprofit entity that will literally go out and purchase parcels of land, and so to get that money, we partially raised that money. They partially loaned that got loans to get that money to do acquisition of all those properties. We used Home Headquarters as an intermediary. It's kind of a complicated thing, but the basic funding premise is that the underlying financing model is a low income housing tax credit. So the Housing Visions Unlimited, once they own all the properties that we've helped fund for the assembly of those properties, they apply to New York State for a tax credit that then could be sold on the market, and that the proceeds from that sale then are used to finance the housing. There's a little bit of private, you know, financing on top of that. But then they develop the housing, and then they collect rents either from people who are making modest incomes, and they have a reduced rental rate, but it works within their pro forma because of the subsidy, or they're taking Section 8 vouchers or whatever, you know, other kinds of public programs are available, and that keeps the cash flow going. And the interesting thing about these models is that after a house has been on the market, or after a building has existed for 15 years, the people who live in the buildings are actually qualified to purchase them and own them themselves. So there is a theoretical opportunity to transition into owner occupancy, though we're way too early to see if that's really going to happen.
The other thing, as I understand it, is although Housing Visions is a nonprofit, the tax credits, of course, are purchased by private for-profit individuals or organizations, so that the houses are on the property tax rolls.
Tom, over a year ago, there was significant concern about refugees and specific Asian population being attacked in various venues and all that, and there was a lot of concern. Can you comment at all in terms of the racial or just ethnic strife on the north side?
It's a significant concern. It's one of the most significant concerns we face on the north side. I will say a couple things about it. One, I think it's a very challenging dynamic when you bring people from other countries who are vulnerable, who are different, and yet are receiving a lot of support and services, at least ostensibly, into a community that is largely occupied by people from generational poverty and people who, in some ways, have been and feel abandoned and feel isolated and disconnected from opportunity. And so I think it's really natural sometimes when you bring in, suddenly you plop these populations in, that tensions arise, that discrimination happens. I mean, it's obviously in some ways very similar to what we heard about the Italians and Irish back in, you know, the North and West Side or whatever back, you know, 100 years ago. As far as solutions to that, I think economic development is the big picture solution, because I think as people become empowered, as they become educated, as they become more stable, those tensions, those feelings of abandonment wash away. So it's actually a very important point to say that I think the safety and well-being of the refugees has a lot to do with the safety and well-being of the other people in the community as well. And what the last thing I'll say about it is that our best experience around this issue has come through our Green Train class, because in that class we trained both refugees and people who are American-born. And in those classes, we literally every time watch this amazing transformation take place where cultural exchanges are happening, people are bringing each other to each other's churches, explaining cultural habits, sharing food, and where you can, you know, do all the marketing campaigns or, you know, anything else you want. That common experience, sharing a common goal, working together side by side every day, literally has transformed certain people. And so we think that that's there's an opportunity there for further community building. So that's kind of my...
Dominic, I have a kind of a follow-up question to that. Having had dinner last night at My Land, one of my favorites on that segment of North State Street that has survived, I was thinking about the fact that certainly the Vietnamese refugee population has been here for a number of years. That restaurant's been survived for a number of years, and there are others. Obviously, every refugee group is different, coming from different countries and situations, but is there anything to be learned? Is there any way that the experiences of that population that has been here for a number of years and has resettled, I guess, is what you would say that's being used to help inform? Or
it certainly informs, yeah. I mean, I think that it's the important thing to talk about when you talk about refugees is that it's not just this kind of blanket, you know, piece of fabric. It's each community, each ethnic population has very discrete differences, but there are some similarities that you can take. I think that with the Vietnamese population, you've seen numbers of them enter into the professional class, especially the children of former refugees. And I think we've seen really a tremendous economic kind of capacity that has been installed in the neighborhood through their coming up there, and many of them have stayed in the neighborhood. That said, they only underscore the point I made at the beginning of the presentation, that a lot of the Vietnamese immigrants and refugees have followed the same pattern as their Italian and German predecessors and gone out to the suburbs because, you know, it's safer, you know, concerns about education. God bless you. And so, you know, we only see that as validation that we need to keep working on quality of place. And so, you know, I think that that's kind of...
This is a very inspirational and refreshing presentation, and I know you've alluded to the fact that it's really hard work too, and you also say that challenges are opportunities. This is the real world, and you've been at it for a while. And I hope there's another question after this one, because I just wanted to not bring us down. But have you talked a little bit about barriers? That you've spoken a little bit about a few of them, but are there any other major barriers that you see in your work, and what more do you need to help get over them?
I see. Well, first of all, I think it's just important to put things in context. Just take our job training program. 130 people out of poverty. How many people are in poverty in Syracuse? You know, how many people are in poverty in the North Side? We haven't even moved up. We haven't moved a percentage yet. So to say that we've radically improved the quality of life on the North Side would be a total farce right now. I mean, this is a long view thing. And I think that the thing I try to remind myself and we try to talk about as a staff is that, depending on when you say this process started, this has been a 50 to 75-year process to get to where we are now and in terms of the way this community functions. And so it's not going to happen in a matter of 5 years, which we've been at it for. What we do believe is that we're finding tools and solutions that can be built upon and scaled and driven over time and really building. And I think our biggest challenge as an organization is to last, or at least to have our function last. We're tiny, and we struggle. We struggle every year to survive. I mean, we've had near, extinction moments several times already. And you know, I think it's really important to just be very candid about that. And so I think that to continue to build capacity is the biggest and most important challenge. Other problem I would say is the dynamic between, let me just quickly say it, housing or building stock. You know, it's beautiful, it's great, it's expensive. My contention would be that it's less expensive than continuing to build new infrastructure over time, but the market doesn't always work in a one-to-one match. So we have to figure out ways to continue to drive investment that subsidizes the adaptive reuse of our urban infrastructure, and the North Side's a really good example of that. And where we've seen it, it's had great economic impact, so we just got to keep making that case. I think the last problem is perception. You know, we're trying to invite the middle class back into this community, and I think that as that happens, things start happening exponentially faster than they're happening now. But to get the middle class to move back in the community, we have to make them feel comfortable with that. So that's a big part of what we're also trying to do, is we're trying to real. And the reality is, you know, my wife and I flipped a coin to see where we'd live. I wanted to live around the corner from my work, and she wanted to live around the corner from hers. She's at SU. She won. But I would say half my staff lives in the neighborhood. A lot of my friends live in the neighborhood. And it's a very nice place to live. There's a great quality of life there, but you gotta, you know, we gotta sell that dream a little better, and we gotta continue to make that happen. And so, bringing the middle class back is a really important.
Hear, hear. Thank you, Dominic Robinson, NorthsideUp.org.